Well, we need to start because the fridge has just switched off. It's quiet. Perfect time to do it. And time is getting late, too. It's February 18th now, 2024 of the Common Era. That's not the lateness. It's because of the hour, 2221 hours Eastern Standard Time. 21 seconds, too, actually, interestingly. Ward Green with you again today to do the study in the Crucible, of course, the Crucible article, but I was just referring to 1 Chronicles 4 and 18 because of a comment I make in the paragraph for tomorrow's study, and I'm not sure I understand that yet, but that's something I'll look into. Should I have time? And I think I should before tomorrow. But today's study in this article, actually it's actually in the day after tomorrow, that study, where that is talked about. Today's study, little ones, is from paragraph 6-9 of the C-Cubed article, Crucible of Credible Creed, is the name of the article from 2012, paragraph 9 of chapter 6 now, as to pharaohs of the south invading Nubia. Now this is important because we're talking about the fact that we believe Moses may have been involved in a battle against Nubia when Moses was part of the southern kingdom of Egypt. The reason why we think that too is because from paragraph 6-6, which was before the Arabian tradition inset, we noted already there was a vase belonging to Heret, who was the daughter of Apophis. The vase was found in the tomb of Amenhotep I, who was the pharaoh of the southern kingdom, and that indicates her possible marriage to a pharaoh of the south. Perhaps she married one of the predecessors of Amenhotep I, and he had the vase in his tomb because she was his, perhaps, grandmother or, I mean, great, you know, some relation. It's fascinating. I mean, is it not? It's remarkably interesting and seemingly important, isn't it, little ones? So we just are reading. We have a lot to cover today. I really want to get into this study before we run out of time. As to pharaohs invading Nubia, Pharaoh Khamos, the predecessor of almost the first, these were the kings of the southern Upper Egypt, which is in the south. Upper because it was higher in elevation. That's noteworthy about Khamos because he fought in Nubia, and he was named in a letter by Apophis to the Nubians. Right here we see a quote from this letter that Apophis wrote. By the way, in the Rhind Mathematical Papyrus, the name of Apophis appears along with his year 33 being mentioned. So it was his son, Khamuti, whose name wasn't mentioned. It was merely said that it was a year 11, evidently of the successor of Apophis. In that article, in that document called the Rhind, not an article, but it's a document called the Rhind Papyrus that was a copy of a document made in the time of Amenemhat III, who was two kings after Amenemhat II, who was Joseph's pharaoh during the time of Joseph. The ruler who is in it, Apophis writes, namely Egypt, the ruler who is in Egypt, Khamos the Brave, given life, is attacking me on my soil. Although I have not attacked him in the manner of all he has done against you, speaking to the Nubians in the south of Egypt, he is choosing these two lands to bring affliction upon them, my land and yours, and he has ravaged them. Nubia was invaded typically by the Egyptians, who ruled the southern kingdom, not the north, because, of course, Nubia was lying in the south of Egypt also. Khamos is noteworthy as Khamos is noteworthy as he commenced military engagements both against Nubia and also the northern kingdom of Egypt, as we just mentioned. He was fighting against Apophis, but also against the Nubians in the south, Apophis being in the north, in lower Egypt, in the delta region. Now, Moses was, during these years, between the ages of 17 and 22 years old, born in 1572, that is, in our chronology, that's how old he is, with Khamos ruling 1555, and that's how we get 17 years is 1572 minus 1555. And Khamos ruled until 1550 BCE from 1555. There's smoke in the air here, so I'm choking a little bit on the smoke. Pharaoh Khamos, I'll turn on my HEPA filter as soon as I'm done the talk, the video. It also makes my nose a little runny. Also, the irritation from the smoke. Pharaoh Khamos invaded Kush notably before his third year. I've got the HEPA filter running in the other room, where the air is coming up from the basement, so it's not too bad. Pharaoh Khamos invaded Kush notably before his third year, Kush being the Nubians. 1555, so third year, about 1553, the pharaoh called Khamos invaded Nubia. So that's all for today's study there. We better move forward. We have a study, first of all, in 1 Chronicles 8. As for Benjamin, he became father to Bela, his firstborn, Ashbel the second, and Ahara the third, Noah the fourth, and Repha the fifth. And Bela came to have sons, Adar, and Gera, and Abihud, Abishua, and Naaman, and Ahoa, and Gera, and Chapufan, and Huram. And these were the sons of Ehud. These were the heads of the houses of forefathers belonging to the inhabitants of Geba, and they proceeded to take them into exile at Manahath. And Naaman and Ahijah and Gera, he was the one that took them into exile, and he became father to Uzzah and Ahihud. As for Shaharaim, he became father to children in the field of Moab after he sent them away. Hushim and Beera were his wives, and by Hodesh, his wife, he came to be father to Jobab and Zibiah and Misha and Malcolm and Jeuz and Sakia and Mirma. These were his sons, heads of the houses of forefathers. And by Hushim, he became father to Abitub. That's right, one of the priests was named Abitub. And in the genealogical list of priests, that I think we've already seen that list recently. We had the list of priests until the days of Solomon, down to Solomon's day, from the time of the Exodus, was it, I think? And I calculated the number of, yeah, it was from Eleazar, you know, Phinehas, all the way down to Solomon's time. Apparently there were no missing generations in that lineage, but it was only, you know, wasn't the full 900 or 1,000 years back until Joseph's time. It was only back as far as the Exodus. So it worked out to 31 years per generation, I determined, which is very reasonable, seeing as they're not all firstborn sons who become the next generation succeeding their father as priest. It's probably not all firstborn sons, because some of the firstborn sons probably die for whatever reason. So 31 years per generation is a very, very reasonable average for a generation, as is also 35 years, or any number in that vicinity. And by Hushim, he became father to Abitub and Elpaal, verse 11. And the sons of Elpaal were Eber and Mishem and Shemad, who built Ono and Lod and its dependent towns, and Beriah and Shema These were the heads of the houses of forefathers belonging to the inhabitants of Ajalon. These were the ones that chased away the inhabitants of Gath. And there were Ahio, Sheshach, and Jeremoth, and Zebadiah, and Arad, and Eder, and Micael, and Ishpah, and Joha, the sons of Beriah, and Zebadiah, Meshullam, and Hizki, and Heber, and Ishmaray, and Isliah, and Jobab, the sons of Elpael, and Jacob, and Zikri, and Zabdi, and Eliene, and Zilithay, and Eliel, and Adiah, and Bereah, and Shimrath, the sons of Shimei, and Ishpan, and Eber, and Eliel, and Abdon, and Zikri, and Hanan, and Hananiah, and Elam, and Anathijah, and Ifdia, and Penuel, the sons of Sheshach, and Shamsherai, and Shehariah, and Athaliah, and Jairishiah, and Elijah, and Zikri, the sons of Jeroham. These were the heads of the houses of forefathers by their descendants, headmen. These were the ones that dwelt in Jerusalem. That was the end of, that's for verse 28. We got that far. Now, who was it who became father by Husham in verse 11? Looks like Benjamin. It's talking about Benjamin from the beginning of this chapter. So father doesn't also, obviously from that, father doesn't always mean directly father. By Husham he became father. In other words, father means descendant, you know, forefather. It means forefather who had descendants. So, verse 29, and it was in Gibeon that the father of Gibeon, Jeiel, dwelt, and his wife's name was Maacah. And his son, the firstborn, was Abdon, and Zur, and Kish, and Baal, and Nadab, and Gedor, and Ahio, and Zeker. As for Mikloth, he became father to Shimeah. And these really were the ones that dwelt in front of their brothers in Jerusalem, along with brothers of theirs. As for Ner, he became father to Kish. Kish, in turn, became father to the famous king, whom we all know, King Saul, the first king of Israel. Saul, in turn, became father to Jonathan, and Malchishua, and Abinadab, and Eshbaal, and Jonathan's son was Merabaal. As for Merabaal, he became father to Micah, and the sons of Micah were Pithon and Melech, that is, and Tariah and Ahaz. As for Ahaz, he became father to Jehoiada. Jehoiada, in turn, became father to Alameth and Azmaveth and Zimri. Zimri, in turn, became father to Moza. Moza, in turn, became father to Biniah. Rapha, his son. Eliasa, his son. Azel, his son. And Azel had six sons, and these were their names, Azricam, Bokeru, and Ishmael, and Sheariah, and Obadiah, and Hanan. All these were the sons of Azel. And the sons of Eshek, his brother, were Ulam, his firstborn, Jeush, the second, and Eliphelet, the third. And the sons of Ulam came to be valiant, mighty men, bending the bow, and having many sons and grandsons, 150. One of the very few times where we see the word grandson in the text of the Bible. All these were from the sons of Benjamin. That's the end of 1 Chronicles 8, which we were able to do because it was only 40. Only 40. Seems like a lot of reading of names, but 40 verses. Daniel chapter 9. In the first year of Darius, Daniel wrote, the son of Ahasuerus of the seed of the Medes. This is Darius the Mede, who, evidently the same Darius who had become king immediately following Cyrus having conquered Babylon in 539 BCE, which date is well agreed upon by many, many scholars, that we don't really have any difference from the convention with regard to the year of Cyrus conquering Babylon. So in that first year, that was probably 539 that we're talking about when Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, who's been identified more recently as Gubaru, the governor of a large area. He was a governor of a large area, but he was not Cyrus himself, who was of the seed of the Persians. It couldn't have been Cyrus, so it must have been somebody appointed by Cyrus who was in the same kingdom. Seeing as Cyrus was the Persian king who had conquered the Medes. So it was the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians over whom Cyrus was the overall king. In the first year of the reign of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, I myself, Daniel, verse 2, discerned by the books, that is probably Jeremiah, the number of the years concerning which the word of Jehovah had occurred to Jeremiah the prophet, for fulfilling the devastations of Jerusalem, namely 70 years. And we've talked about this before, this fulfillment of the 70 years of servitude to the Gentile nations and also to Babylon for part of that 70 years. We've talked about that, and in the book of Zechariah chapter 1, we've talked about that. Verse 12, how it talks about the 70 years there. And there is more than one fulfillment of this 70 years, we believe, according to all the information. It looks like it's a multiply fulfilled prophecy regarding the devastations that began at the very first with the death of Josiah in 609 BCE. The king was killed, the Jewish king. That had never happened in their history, where their king had been killed, the king of Judah killed, and then the kingship given to an appointed vassal king of Egypt, whose name was Jehoiakim, after the son of Josiah named Jehoahaz was deposed, having served only 3 months. But that's 608 then, the beginning of the official year one of Jehoiakim, who'd been appointed by Egypt. That was the beginning of the Gentile times, and also of the 70 years, which 70 years were the first years of the Gentile times as well. And I proceeded to set my face to Jehovah the true God, Daniel writes, verse 3, in order to seek him with prayer and with entreaties, with fasting and sackcloth and ashes. And I began to pray to Jehovah my God, and to make confession, and to say, ah, Jehovah the true God, the great one, and the fear-inspiring one, keeping the covenant and the loving kindness to those loving him, and to those keeping his commandments. We have sinned and done wrong, and acted wickedly and rebelled, and there's been a turning aside from your commandments and from your judicial decisions. And we have not listened to your servants, the prophets, who have spoken in your name to our kings, our princes, and our forefathers, and to all the people of the land. To you, O Jehovah, there belongs the righteousness, but to us the shame of face as at this day, to the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to all those of Israel, those nearby and those far away in all the lands to which you dispersed them because of their unfaithfulness with which they acted against you. We know the northern kingdom of Israel, for example, was taken away by the Assyrians under Sargon in the year, in our chronology, BCE 719 was the year of that conquest of Samaria, the city which was the capital of Israel, the northern kingdom, conquered in BCE 719 after a 3-year siege by the Assyrians. And of course, we also know that before Daniel, you know, I shouldn't say before Daniel's time. No, this was during Daniel's time, of course. Daniel had been taken to Babylon around 605 BCE, roughly. But also, we've seen that already, but also during his life, in BCE 587, Jerusalem had been destroyed, and therefore Judah had been fully, you know, disinhabited more or less at that time. Now, it says that Jeremiah, for example, when we look back, this is fascinating, there's a prophecy by Jeremiah which mentioned that during the time of desolation, there would, you know, that Jerusalem would be a desolate waste without man and domestic animal. And that was after it had been given into the hand of the Chaldeans. It doesn't say that that period of desolate waste without man and domestic animal would be 70 years. It doesn't say that particularly. That's interesting because they were only really about 50 years, according to also Josephus, but according to the what we have for the actual chronology that we know about, which is BCE 587 for the destruction of Jerusalem. It's well documented, well, determined, by all the evidence, including many, many, many cuneiform inscriptions from Babylon itself, and many historical lists of kings by ancient historians. It's been well documented that that was the year 587, mainly by the financial documents and so on of Babylon, and in which the year of the king was given. So we know how many years, because we have so many financial documents from Babylon, we know exactly what the year of each king was, how many years each of them reigned, and we know, every year of every king has numerous documents. It is a desolate waste without man and domestic animal refers to the 50 years, something like that, from 587 to 537 when the Jews returned under the decree of Cyrus to re-inhabit and repopulate their own homeland. Daniel chapter 9 we're reading, and so during Daniel's own time, his own days, during his own days, and he lived a long time, evidently, Jerusalem was destroyed during his time, and then even there was another exile after the destruction of Jerusalem, as we saw. It was further depopulated according to the last chapter of Jeremiah, where it talks about all the exiles done by Nebuchadnezzar, the last one being, it's either year 22 or year 23, Nebuchadnezzar. My mind is not quite in possession of that fact at the moment. Oh, to you, O Jehovah, there belongs. Yeah. The righteousness, but to us the shame of face, as at this day. Verse 7, to the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and to all those of Israel. So referring to everyone in Israel, possibly the shame also of the northern kingdom, but right, and he says, in all of the lands to which you dispersed them, due to their unfaithfulness. Verse 8 now. O Jehovah, to us belongs the shame of face, to our kings, to our princes, and to our forefathers, because we have sinned against you. To Jehovah, our God, belong the mercies and the acts of forgiveness, for we have rebelled against him, and we have not obeyed the voice of Jehovah, our God, by walking in his laws that he set before us, by the hand of his servants, the prophets. And all those of Israel have overstepped your law, and there has been a turning aside by not obeying your voice, so that you poured out upon us the curse and the sworn oath that is written in the law of Moses, the servant of the true God, for we have sinned against him. Against God, but against the law of Moses. And he proceeded to carry out his words that he had spoken against us, and against our judges who judged us, by bringing upon us great calamities such as was not done under the whole heavens, as what has been done in Jerusalem. He refers to the destruction of Jerusalem, also the exile of Jerusalem in BCE 597, and Daniel's capture in about 605 BCE, in the third year of Jehoiakim, in Daniel chapter 1 and 1, it's mentioned. How in the third year of Jehoiakim, or we've also said that could be the fourth year, because that was the year that Nebuchadnezzar conquered Necho at Carchemish by the river Euphrates, according to Jeremiah 46 and 2. Just as it is written in the law of Moses, all this calamity, verse 13, it has come upon us, Daniel 9:13, and we have not softened the face of Jehovah our God by turning back from our error and by showing insight into your trueness. And Jehovah kept alert to the calamity and finally brought it upon us. For Jehovah our God is righteous in all his works that he has done, and we have not obeyed his voice. And now, O Jehovah our God, you who brought your people out from the land of Egypt by a strong hand and proceeded to make a name for yourself as at this day, we have sinned, we have acted wickedly. O Jehovah, according to all your acts of righteousness. Please, may your anger and your rage turn back from your city, Jerusalem, your holy mountain. For because of our sins and because of the errors of our forefathers, Jerusalem and your people are an object of reproach to all those round about us. And now listen, O our God, to the prayer of your servant and to his entreaties. And cause your face to shine upon your sanctuary that is desolated for the sake of Jehovah. Incline your ear, O my God, and hear, to open your eyes and see our desolated conditions, and the city that has been called by your name. For not according to our righteous acts are we letting our entreaties fall before you, but according to your many mercies. That's the end of verse 18. I want to check something. I looked up a lot of scriptures today, a fair number. One of them was Lamentations 101. You see how it says, how she that was a princess among the jurisdictional districts has come to be for forced labor. Right. So it wasn't merely the idea. Well, yeah, that's fascinating, isn't it? I had seen that, and I got some new insight from that. I'm trying to remember what the insight was that I got from that. Right. Yes, I mean, as regards, I got new insight as with regard to how that applies to the desolation of Jerusalem. They came to be for forced labor. Which, where are we now? 20:19. O Jehovah, do hear. Do forgive. O Jehovah, do pay attention and act. Do not delay for your own sake, O my God, for your own name has been called upon your city and upon your people. While I was still speaking and praying and confessing my sin, oh right, they came to be for forced labor, you see. So the idea is the land was not entirely disinhabited for that whole period of time either. But, yeah, that's the whole idea, is this idea that the 70 years of desolation is not just a period of desolation only, right? It was a reference to the fact that they came to be subject to forced labor, and that has some bearing on the interpretation of whether or not the land was completely disinhabited for 70 years. It was more or less, you know, became more disinhabited as more exiles occurred, of course. For your own name has been called upon your city and upon your people, it says. So, O Jehovah, do hear, do forgive. O Jehovah, do pay attention and act. Do not delay for your own sake. In other words, Jehovah's name was what was important there. Verse 20, while I was still speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel and making my request for favor before Jehovah my God concerning the holy mountain of my God, we've got to hurry because we're not going to get finished if we don't. Yes, while I was yet speaking in prayer, the man Gabriel, whom I had previously seen in the vision, and we saw, he had the appearance of an earthly man, and he was one of the holy ones. Right? And he was able to, and we saw that in Daniel chapter 8 in the prophecy about Medo-Persia and Greece. Gabriel came to me when I was extremely weary, verse 21, at about the time of the evening gift offering, and he gave me understanding, saying, O Daniel, Gabriel said, O Daniel, now I have come to give you insight and understanding. When you began your entreaty, the word went out, and I have come to report it to you. because you are someone very precious. So consider the matter and understand the vision. There are 70 weeks that have been determined for your people. Oh, this is the study Bible. Right. I got into the study Bible somehow. I want to go to the reference Bible. Is that it? No. There it is. We can read either version. They're very similar. Daniel 24, there are 70 weeks that have been determined upon your people and upon your holy city in order to terminate the transgression and to finish off sin and to make atonement for error and to bring in righteousness for times indefinite and to imprint a seal upon vision and prophet and to anoint the Holy of Holies. And we talk about this chapter 9 of Daniel in the article Born and Raised. So for more detail, you can look there. Born and Raised Messiah, the last article that was written by yours truly. And you should know and have the insight, verse 25, that from the going forth of the word to restore and to rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the leader, there will be 7 weeks, also 62 weeks. And this is, of course, weeks of years is one of the interpretations of this. That's the prophetic interpretation. 7 years and 60, or rather 7 weeks of years, which is 49 years, and also 62 weeks of years, which is 434, I believe, years. She will return and actually be rebuilt. So 434 plus 49 is 483, which is the 69 weeks, with 70 weeks being 490 years. Little children, she will return and be actually rebuilt with a public square and moat, but in the straits of the times. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah will be cut off with nothing for himself, and the city and the holy place, the people of a leader that is coming, will bring to their ruin. That was Titus, the Roman general of the armies of Rome, in the Roman Empire. And the end of it will be by the flood, and until the end there will be war. What is decided upon is desolations. And he must keep the covenant in force for the many for 1 week, and at the half of the week he will cause sacrifice and gift offering to cease. And that was the crucifixion of Jesus. And upon the wing of disgusting things there will be the one causing desolation. And until an extermination, the very thing decided upon will go pouring out also upon the one lying desolate. That's the end of Daniel chapter 9. We have like 16 seconds or something. We have about 20 seconds. We're now less. We're down to 10, 12 seconds for the end of the study here. That was well timed, but there's so much to talk about, isn't there, little ones? So it's been wonderful to be with you. This is February 18th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 22:54. Hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty. And this is Cassie saying bye for now.